So we're continuing from last week's discussion, back in our sheets. So we're going through the chayit of the Itz Hadas, and we're trying to really go through it, you know, piece by piece, step by step, you know, with the mefarshim, to really understand what happened, again, beyond our just simple impression of, you know, some woman getting fooled by a snake and eating a fruit. So this is something which goes much further than that. Based on what I recall, the last thing we did last week was source number 7. That was the Ramban discussing what it means that you'll die the day you eat the fruit. So I'm going to move into source number 8. So source number 8 is coming off of the Pasuk, Vayushneim Arumim, Adam Vayishtav Lisboshashu. It says that they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. So as I mentioned last week, something about this chait really impacted, you know, their own personal sense of shame. Before the chait, they could walk around unclothed and not feel ashamed. And then we know the result of the chait was the immediate embarrassment of being unclothed. So we have to understand that progression. Why before the chait were they not ashamed? Why did the chait make them ashamed? What happened over there? So the source number 8 is the Ramban. And everyone says a very similar thing in regards to this point, but we'll see two sources on this. So number 8 is the Ramban. The Ramban says, this Ramban is actually being selected from an earlier Ramban, but I just stuck it over here because he addressed this point. Before the chait, the man and the woman, they had no sexual desire. They didn't have that taiva. It's just that they want to make children. So when it was time to have children, they would come together and have children. So therefore, all of their limbs were the same in their own eyes, like hands or face. I mean, everything was there. No limb was more animalistic than the other. No limb was used for anything, let's say, of, you know, personal taiva, personal gain. Everything was used for, you know, for duty, for obligation. So just like we're not ashamed of our faces or our hands, and we need them to act and function, they weren't ashamed of their private areas either. But once they ate from the tree, they had bechira, they had this choice. We discussed last week that personal opinions, personal desires, and now they have in their desires to do bad or to do good to themselves, to others. Again, they had this their own personal approach to the world. Wasn't just what Hashem wants out of me, but it's what do I feel, what's my opinion, how do I want to go about things, what feels good for me. On one hand, this is a very divine attribute. But it's also bad for us because the Yetzer Hara and Taiva came in. So the Ramban's teaching us that they weren't ashamed of their limbs because all those were the same. There was nothing they could look at and say, this is my physical side, this is my animalistic side. They would say, the entire body is kadosh, it's all created b'tzelem Elokim. Every part of the person is there to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly and do Hashem's will. So why should I be ashamed one part more than the other? That was the state before the chait. If you look at number 9, so he says again a very similar thing. This is the Sforno. Ki az hayu kol pulos sehem, v'cholei varehem lasos son konam bilvad. Again, before the chait, all of their actions and all of their limbs were there totally to serve Hashem, to do the ratzon of Hashem, the ratzon of their Creator. Lo lahasik tanugos nifsados klal. Nothing about their body drove them to attain any sort of temporary pleasure, destructive pleasures. Therefore, the idea of zivuk, cohabitation, was the same idea as eating or drinking. It was a necessity. It was just a bodily need, but there's nothing more to it than that. It was just something that was needed for the body. So therefore, they're what we call the covered areas to them, where again, we're just like the mouth and the face and the hands. There was no further implication of that part of the body. So Ramban Sforno is saying really the same point. The point being, people did not pursue their own personal pleasures prior to the chait. It was Ratzon Hashem. We do what Hashem wants out of us. Everything we do is based on our duty, and that's about it. That's a level which people nowadays are very far from. The greatest tzaddikim, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu, might somehow dream to reach that level, but that's Adam before the chait. That's something which is kind of out of our reach at this point in history. So that's why they weren't ashamed. Yeah.
Why does it say Adam v'Isha? It says v'hi v'yu shnehem arumim. So why does it have to emphasize Adam v'Ishto?
That's interesting. I would suggest that even when they were together as husband and wife, they still weren't ashamed because it was all just a sense of duty. I mean, it wasn't just when they were off doing their own things, but even together, in an intimate way, maybe they weren't ashamed of it. That'd be my thought. Yeah.
Was there intimacy before the fight?
Sure. I mean, they had children before. Adam, Cain, and Hevel were born in Gan Eden, so they were born immediately. There was no waiting period. There was no pregnancy. It was immediate. It says that they went in the bed, and out came the children. that's how the Chazal described it. So, I mean, having to deal with 9 months of pregnancy was part of the curse. So,
and there was no pain for the woman.
There was
right?
No pain. Yeah, no pain in giving birth. It was a different world, right? A different world. So that's the idea of shame. Now we're going to go into the Perek Gimel. So the next pasuk is Hanachash Ha'aru Mikol Chayas Hasadeh. Asher Asa Hashem Elokim says that the Nachash was Arum. So it's very interesting. You kind of see a play on words here. The previous pasuk uses the word Arumim, and which we translate typically as naked, Amchavro naked. In pasuk Aleph, it says the Nachash was Arum, and there we don't mean naked. There we mean clever. So that is pointed out. There seems to be some sort of play on words, some sort of connection. I'm not sure exactly how to explain it. But there's an idea that being naked and being clever are related words. I did see once, as a side point, I did see once a Peirush explain that all kosher animals have some sort of covering to them, meaning that the animals we eat are all going to be, have hair or feathers. The birds we eat have feathers. The fish we eat have scales. And then even the kosher locusts, they have to have their wings covering their body, which we don't eat those typically, but some Sephardim would, and after their wings covering their body. So because the idea of being Arum, being naked, is a trait of the Nachash, and a trait of Ra. So I'm not sure how that all ties together, but it's an interesting thought. And every kosher animal is going to have some sort of covering over their body. They don't just walk around just with their skin. So that's an interesting thing.
Does it have anything to do with the fact that Adam and Chava were Arum, that it emphasizes the Nachash?
It seems to. I don't know what it would be, because again, the translation here would be more clever than naked. So I'm not sure what the. But it is pointed out that the word is used, and it's back to back psukim with the same word with different translations. So it says that the Nachash was more. Again, we'll call it more clever, more crafty than all of the animals of the field that Hashem created. V'yomer el isha. So the Nachash approaches the woman and says to her, "Af ki amar elokim lo sochul mikol tzagan." He says, even though didn't Hashem say not to eat from all the trees of the garden? So we'll discuss what he said to her, which is also confusing. Before we discuss what he said, let's discuss who he was. And all of us have this image in our heads of this walking snake. And we can't quite figure out, what is this creature? What happened to it? You see little cartoons sometimes of the snake. It's a funny thing for us to think about. What is this Nachash? Why is the Nachash coming to Chava to entice her? How is he talking? What's the whole story of the Nachash? So I brought here a few sources that explain what this Nachash is. So first, let's look at number 10, is the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni writes an interesting point. He says, Nachash Arum, Sarch Lomar Shaydei Mikre, Kodum Lechen, Ochom Etzadas. So he says that the snake also ate from Eitz Hadas before this incident. Meaning, we don't think about, did the animals eat from Eitz Hadas? Were they allowed to? Were they not allowed to? I mean, it was a tree in the middle of the garden. Anyone could have gone and taken a fruit off the tree. So the Sforno says the Nachash ate from Eitz Hadas b'mikra. I mean, it sounds like he didn't mean to. I don't think he had any malicious intent. But prior to the Chay, the Nachash ate from Eitz Hadas. Sharei Azhar lo haisa rak la'adam. Because the warning was only given to Adam. So I guess he wasn't commanded not to, but the impact of the chait would impact the snake. So then it says, V'yomer el ha'isha, pasach kosh baruch hu es pia nachash, kamosh pasach es pia asan. So when he spoke, it wasn't that the snake had the ability of speech in those days, it was actually a nes. Very similar, the Chizkuni says, to Bilam's donkey starting to speak. We'll see other approaches. Some say that snakes had the ability to speak before the chayt, in general. The Chizkuni is saying it's not true. He's saying that snakes could not speak. But Hashem gave Adam and Chava a special test by granting this snake, through a nace, the ability of speech. Very interesting thing. How does he know that Nachash ate from the tree? Because the fact he was called, why was he more clever than the other animals? The Chizkun is saying that Hashem didn't make the snake more intelligent than other animals, but the snake ifnei tzadas. And ifnei tzadas, you get a special intelligence, which other animals did not get. So that's the Sforno's point. That's how he became more clever than other animals. But I guess once he reached that level, and Hashem wanted to give an esayon to Adam and Chava, he therefore gave the snake ability to speak, and we knew he was very clever, he was able to trick her into the sin. Also according to Chizkun, we see that Hashem orchestrated this. I mean, I guess we could think it's obvious that Hashem is the one who gave the challenge to Adam and Chava, but we see that Hashem gave a special nes that this snake should be able to speak. So it wasn't just that Hashem placed everything in it just to see what happened. You know, let's throw it all in the mix and see who can fool who. But Hashem actually sent the Nachash to speak to Chava. Yeah.
Doesn't somebody say, though, that Adam and Chava understood like Shlomo did the language of animals?
So we'll see some other commentaries. Some say that. Yes, correct. Every Rishon has their own take on this. So this is the Chizkuni's take. Let's look at Eben Ezra. And this is what you're saying. Eben Ezra is number 11. Eben Ezra says, HaNachash, Yesh Omrim, so some say, as Mr. Kobe was saying, that the woman understood the language of animals. Similar to Shlomo HaMelech, it says he understood how animals communication. So Adam, you could say that Chava, I assume Adam as well, when they were created, they had this special ability to understand animals. So you can explain that when it says the Nachash spoke, it means, you know, in his own hints. I mean, he didn't actually speak, I guess it was Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, to Adam and Chava. He spoke snake talk, and they understood snake talk. That's how some explain. So that's one opinion quoted by Eben Ezra. But some say, Shehu Satan, that the Nachash was actually the Satan incarnate. You know, it was the Satan posing as a snake. So those are two different approaches of the Eben Ezra. But then he has a kasha on this. Vechol Yiru Sofa Parsha. So that's what I don't understand. If it was the Satan, then what's the punishment at the end? There's punishment at the end after the chait. Hashem tells the snake, you have to slither around on your belly and eat dirt. Well, if it was the Satan, the Satan's a malach who comes to give us challenges. That's what the Satan is. So you're not going to punish the Satan by slithering on his stomach and eating dirt. It doesn't really make sense. And Hashem would punish the Satan. The Satan's doing his job. He's supposed to be doing it. That's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to give us challenges. So it doesn't really make sense that it means the Satan incarnate, as we're saying, based on the punishment he's given afterwards. And then, Ma Tam lo kill us hu yishuv charosh. And what's the idea of the curse? Hu yishuv charosh, that the human being will, you know, knock you in the head because you're on the ground, and you'll bite at his heels. I mean, it doesn't really make sense if it's the Satan. It doesn't really fit the whole story. So we have two opinions he quotes, and he doesn't like the second opinion of the fact that the Satan was actually dressing up as a snake. And many mafarshim, they make a mistake, and they're confused, and they try to figure out, why did Hashem curse the Nachash? And did Nachash have das or not? Was Nachash an intelligent being, like a human being? Was the Nachash just an animal? Was he ever commanded not to challenge the woman? I mean, if you're being punished, it must mean that you had an expectation that you didn't live up to. You don't punish somebody if there's no expectations of them. It's because an expectation is supposed to live up to, and they didn't live up to it, so you punish them. So does Hashem ever tell the Nachash, don't mess with the woman, don't go trick her? I mean, was he given a command, even mitzvah? Why was he punished at all? V'yomer of Sajigon. Achar shizbarar lo, she'ein dibar v'das kim ba'adam levado. So Rav Sajigon says the following. He says that the whole concept of dibor, of speech, and das, and wisdom, and knowledge, only applies to Adam. So stark lomar ki nachash gam asun ledibro. So you're forced to say that the snake, and by extension, the donkey of Bilam, never actually spoke. They didn't speak in the way that we're speaking to each other. They didn't speak, because only the human being can speak. Rak malach dibir bishvilam. Rather, Rav Sajigon says that a malach spoke on their behalf. So, according to Sajagon, it's interesting. You know, the Nachash was there, and Chava heard speech, but it didn't really come from the Nachash, it came from a Malach. You know, Bilam was there, he heard the donkey speech, but the donkey didn't really speak, he came from a Malach. It was like the Malach was kind of, you know, it's like a ventriloquist, like on the side, making it look like it spoke or something, but it didn't really speak. So that's Rav Sajagon's opinion. V'heis shivalov Rav Shmuel ben Chofni, so he says, and then Rav Shmuel ben Chofni had an opinion, and then he brings all these different opinions here. And finally, he says, "V'enai." So this is what I think is right. So he rejects all these other opinions, and he says the following: "Shehem hadvarim kemashmam," that what you see in the Chumash that the Nachash spoke is 100% true. He really spoke, and he spoke in Lashon HaKodesh, as we speak to each other. The snake actually did speak, and he walked upright. Some das ba'adam, some bo. And the same one, meaning Hashem, who placed knowledge in man, placed knowledge in the snake. V'nira pasuka e'heyed ki haya orum mikol chayas asadeh. And that's what the pasuk is saying. It says that he was more clever than all animals of the field. I mean, he wasn't as clever as Adam, but of all the animals, the snake was created in a very special way that it did have some resemblance to Adam, as it were. It had dea v'dibur, it had some sort of knowledge, had some sort of speech. It walked upright, the posture of a human being. The parish arum chacham shiaset dvarav ba'arma. And what it says he was an arum. What does Aram mean? I mean, we know Lashon HaKodesh, there's a lot of synonyms for being wise or smart, and they always have to have a different connotation to them. So what does it mean he was Aram? Aram means that he was very well-versed in trickery. Being Aram usually means that you have the ability of deception. You're very, very, you know, like a street smart, clever. It doesn't mean like wisdom in terms of, I have a lot of knowledge of books I've read. It doesn't mean that. Valtisma bavorios Aram achri arumim hem shnei taimim. And he points out what we pointed out, and don't think it's funny that it says the word arum after arumim. It's two different translations. So he doesn't, again, it seems like a play on words or something. He says two different translations. Don't let it bother you. Fine. So then the rest of it is about the language. Let me skip down here. If you skip to the second two lines down, the ode, ima malach diber al piv in chet lenachash. She says, furthermore, if it was the malach that spoke for them, then again we have the kasha that he didn't do anything wrong, the Nachash. If I stand here innocently, and Ventriloquist comes on the side and says, making me say bad things, it's not my fault, it's his fault. That's why you're punishing me. So if it was the Malach speaking on behalf of the Nachash, again, why did Hashem punish the Nachash? Zemach l'tochen liyos sluchel shel Hashem, v'en Malach mamre pi Hashem, v'sholom ich matza Nachash is isha in anu shayla. So, also, if there's a punishment, it must be it wasn't Hashem's messenger. I mean, if Hashem sends you to do something, you can be punished for it. If Nachash was told, you go and you speak, so then why is he being punished for such a thing? Mm-hmm. So according to Ibn Ezra, the Nachash was created as an intelligent being. Not like Adam, but in terms of the animal world, it was the most intelligent of them all. It could stand up straight and it could speak, and the Nachash actually did go and trick Chava. The Nachash, I guess, being that he had this das, was supposed to be doing, you know, he knew there was the wrong thing to do because he was punished for it, and Hashem punished him. It wasn't a malach, the Satan dressed up. It wasn't either of those things. Now, was it actually Lashon HaKodesh, or was it snake language? Again, that's something which he doesn't have a kasha on. He seems to go to the point that is actually speaking in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, his real speech. But there's still an opinion that it was snake language, which, again, that could be right based on Ibn Ezra. He doesn't reject that anyway. He doesn't have any big problem with that. But this is a different kind of pshat than we saw in the Chizkuni, because the Chizkuni is saying that snakes cannot speak in those days, but Hashem gave it, for that moment, the power of speech. Whereas according to Ibn Ezra, snakes could speak. Snakes were created the ability of speech. Before we get to the Sforno, just let me elaborate on this for a second. We often look at the Nachash, and if you look at a lot of different Machshavah Svarim, there's a correlation between the Nachash and Esav, or the Nachash and Amalek. And you find that in a lot of different contexts. And just on one level, we know that Yaakov and Esav were twins. They discussed this, you know, last year in this class, something like that. Yaakov and Esav were twins. They were kind of created equal and opposite in some way. They both had power, they both were influential, but they had very different drives within them, and they went in their own directions. So at creation as well, Hashem made Adam, but Adam needs to have, you know, his antagonist. There has to be the villain. There has to be somebody who's going to put Adam to the test. So if all the animals were just animals, and they were not clever, and they couldn't speak, so then where was the challenge? Where was the equal and opposite to Adam? And where do you find Adam's antagonist, Adam's villain? Where do you find that one that's going to give Adam a real challenge? So the Nachash was created with that purpose. Same way that Esav and Yaakov are brothers, but they're kind of equal and opposites. So Nachash, in some way, was almost an equal and opposite to Adam. Adam was created, you know, with the standing upright, with the human mind, ability for speech. And according to Ibn Ezra, so was the Nachash. But Nachash was created, though, with this type of deceptive attitude. The same way that Esau was able to, Esau also was known for his trickery, for his deception. And Nachash also was known for his deception. So that put Adam and Chava to the test, which then they failed in that test. But there had to be that equal and opposite. Zelu mazeh bar Elokim, says in Koheles, that Hashem creates, you know, this opposite that. There's always going to be an equal and opposite to everything in this world. So that would be the role of the Nachash according to Ibn Ezra. That's the way Amalek is compared to Nachash as well. Amalek is kind of the antagonist against Klal Yisrael. They're our opposition. They're out to do anything they can to stop us serving Hashem. We're here in the world to bring Kiddush Hashem. And they come up and clash with us directly. And Nachash was that being which is supposed to clash directly with Adam.
Rav Asher?
Yeah.
Was the Nachash supposed to be like a Mashores? Mashores to Adam? Was he supposed to be like,
right,
serving and doing all kinds of things for Adam?
I'm not sure. I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, based on my analogy with Esav, I mean, Esav's, if had he done the right thing, he would have been there to Misharis to Yaakov. He would have said Yaakov would have been the one in charge of the spiritual growth of the world. Esav would have been his sidekick helping with the material growth of the world. That's a many mafarshim explain. What's the Nachash? If the Nachash didn't do this, what's his role? I'm not sure. I don't know the source for that. It's interesting because could Adam have harnessed the power of this Nachash and done good with him? That'd be the question. I don't know. It's a good question. So this is the Ibn Ezra and the Chizkuni. And both of them are clearly understanding Nachash to be literally a snake. A snake that came and spoke to Adam. It was an outsider coming to entice Chava to do the wrong thing. The Sfornos is a very, very different pshat, which when I learned it, it was something very new to me. I never saw this pshat before. And he seems to understand the Nachash as a mashal. I mean, he seems to reject the idea of an actual snake enticing Chava. And we talk about, you know, our childhood images of stories in the Torah. This is not what we think of. We really think of this snake coming over, walking. And really, Ibn Ezra says, we think of this walking snake talking in the Chava, which is, you know, it's true according to Ibn Ezra. The Sforno, we'll read it together in a second, source 12. He looks at this Nachash just as a mashal for the Yetzer Hara. Meaning, the Ibn Ezra brought up the concept that maybe it means the Satan. Maybe it was the Satan, you know, fooling Adam. And the Sforno says even more than that. He says it was Adam's own Yetzer Hara, tricking him, and the Torah using the Nachash is just an analogy. It's just a metaphor. It's just some sort of mashal to what the Yetzer Hara is. Let's look at number 12. HaNachash, who's Satan, who Yetzer Hara. So he says the Nachash is the Satan, and it's the Yetzer Hara. Rav HaChozek, it's very powerful. Imir Yosanire, but it's very hard to spot. Very hard to see. We know a snake, you know, they slither around in the grass, they hide in the brush, and if you bother them, they jump out and bite, chas v'shalom. But, you know, the snakes are usually not out in the open. Snakes kind of hide off in the side, and if they feel fit, if they want to, or you bother them, they'll jump out and they'll attack. So, it's like the Yitzhahara. Yitzhahara is not out in the open. Yitzhahara is very, very powerful, but very devious. You know, you can't really see him so well. You know, it's not really obvious till after the fact. And once you've done the wrong thing, you say, oh, I should have done that. But before you make that wrong decision, you didn't, you know, you weren't thinking about it. Because often we label things based on that which is similar to them. Like we would call a king a lion, a mighty lion or something. Because we know that lion's always used as the metaphor for the king of the animals. Even in the Chazal and the Gemara refers to the lion. It's not just a modern day an analogy, but the Gemara also calls the Melch Shebachayos is the Aryeh. So the lion is a king is called a lion. So when we say, you know, oh mighty lion, we don't mean that king is actually a lion, but it's a metaphor. Vayikra ha'oivim ha'mazikim nachashim sifonim. And we might refer to dangerous enemies as poisonous snakes. You know, that dirty snake, you know, coming to attack me. You don't mean he's actually a snake, but it's a metaphor. Asher ein lehem lachash, like the snakes that you cannot charm. Like there's a nevuah, Hashem says, I think it's in Cheskel. I think it's in Yirmiyah. Hashem says, I'm sending upon you nechashim sifonim, you know, these poisonous snakes. So he's referring to the enemies of Klal Yisrael. So valzeh derech kara bazeh makom es hayitzahara. Hamachti. So in this manner, in this story in the Chumash, Hashem, the Torah refers to the Yetzer Hara, which caused us to sin, as a Nachash. Because the Yetzer Hara is similar to a Nachash. So Sforno is really saying that it's totally a metaphor. This is a fascinating way to understand this story. There was no snake. There was the Yitzhahara within Adam, and within Chava, and within Adam, which enticed them, and that brought about the sin. And now he's going to give us a very good definition of Yitzhahara. The Yitzhahara's benefits in the world are minimal. The Yitzhahara does not really give us anything of value, nothing of meaning, nothing of substance. Venizkorav, there's a lot of damage. So that's what the Yitzhahara doesn't give you much, but does plenty of damage. In Miyad Haroso, and it's not really seen. Like I said, it's not really visible. So a Nachash doesn't really do all that much for us. A Nachash is very, very damaging and dangerous, but also hard to spot. You know, they surprise you. The Kvar Muzal Shai Samael Rochevalov, Chazal already used this language. That's Samael. Samael is the description of the Satan. Was riding upon the Nachash. So what does that mean? So this is actually something we discussed a little bit last week. He says that you have what's in ourselves. We have the koch hamisaveh, the desire within ourselves that makes us, moves us towards things which are inappropriate decisions to make. And why do we make those decisions? So it's because of the koch hamadame. It's because of our imaginations. It's because of our fantasies. Hamovile love, and that brings us towards it. And the only tanugim, it gives us all these images of pleasures we can get, and you know, the feelings that we can achieve, and the honor we'll get for doing the wrong things, which take us away from serving Hashem properly. So he's describing, let's just make it clear, that the Nachash was the Yetzer Hara within the person, and the Yetzer Hara is able to entice us to do the wrong thing based on our koach hadimyon, based on our fantasy and our imagination. Meaning our intellect might tell us that's wrong to do. But then our dimyon would tell us, yeah, but look how much fun it's going to be. Look how good you'll feel. Look how pleasurable it is. Look what you gain from it. Look how much money you can make. And suddenly we have all these different visions and fantasies. It's not always even, it could be subconsciously. But we see that there's a benefit in it based on our imagination. It's not reality. It's imaginary. That's the idea of the koach hadimyon. And this is the way Yitzhar functions. I mean, when we learn this story, a lot we learn from the story is to learn the tricks of the Yitzhara. Now, this is the very first description in the Torah of a challenge given to a human being of the Yitzhara. Therefore, you can learn his tricks. If you know his tricks, you can overcome his tricks. So one of the Yitzhara's greatest trick, I mean, really the most powerful force that causes us to do averos, is the koch hadimyon. It's the fantasy in a person. It's our imaginary gains we're going to get from avera. If we understood that avera gets us nowhere and does nothing for us, we would never do it. Yeah.
We also have a positive imagination, like can't the Yitzhara used as a coach per se to build up the positive imagination?
Well, the imagination itself is not good or bad. Imagination could be either. The Yitzhara uses the bad imagination to get you to the wrong things. Imagination, in a good sense, is also no one would have ambition to accomplish much or build much without imagining how far I can go, what I can do. So there's a very positive part of imagination as well. But the Yitzhara will, the Dimyon itself is neutral. The Yitzhara will harness it for his purposes. It's open harness it for his purposes. That's how we view it. So Yitzhara will harness it and say, you know, you'll gain so much through this Avera. When really, if we understood what we were doing, we would say, I have nothing to gain from doing this. This is just total fantasy. It's not reality. So that's what he did. That's what he did to Chava. Ki amnam koach hamisaveh im dimyoni tanugim. Everyone has within themselves a desire, a will to do their own things and not do Ratzon Hashem. So that along with the dimyon, that along with the imagination, which gives us this false sense of pleasure and gives us this false vision of what we can do and who we can be, now these two things together will command to our physical body to act. Then we miss Hashem's will. Unless we have the mind overcome them, vimchabehem, and protest. So he's really describing how chait works. And again, sometimes it's very obvious that it works this way, sometimes it's more subconscious. But the way it works is that we have naturally within us Hashem programmed into us, we have a drive to do things which make us feel good, a drive to do things, which make us, you know, feel our own personal gain, which may or may not be what Hashem wants out of us. But that's our drive within. Then the Yetzer Hara is able to say, yeah, well, if you do this, look what you'll get to. Look what you'll achieve. It'll feel so good. You'll be so great. People will honor you, etc. So then you say, oh, wow, there really is something to gain out of this chait. So at that point, the seichel is supposed to come in and say, stop. Are you crazy? What are you doing? That's not what Hashem wants out of you. If the seichel can overpower these two drives, then you stop yourself and you do the right thing. If the seichel cannot overpower these drives, so then they're able to tell the body, okay, go ahead and do it. The body goes ahead and does what it's supposed to do, what it wants to do, and the seichel, because the seichel did not stop it. And that's exactly what Chazal tells us. He quotes from Chazal, Ein of libas asuri dechata. The eyes and the heart are the they spy out sin. Ashal zehisir ba'omro, and that's what it says, and we say in Shema, Vos asurach relvav lachrei nechem. So the eyes and the heart, you know, the heart's your desires. The eyes could be, you know, what you see, you're gained from the sin, some sort of metaphoric sense. But that's what Sosuru tells us, don't stray after the heart and the eyes, follow the seichel. The seichel tells intellectually and what's right and what's wrong. So, again, the Sforno is understanding the whole description of Chava with the Nachash is her own personal struggle within herself. She's struggling within herself. Shall I eat from the tree or shall I not eat from the tree? And this is the conversation she's having with her own personal Yitzhara. So it's very different than the way we typically understand it, the literal translation of the Torah, and the way that the other Mefarshim understood it. There's no snake there, but it's all her own personal struggle. I think the Sforno is unique in this Shita. I think that, as far as I know, everybody else learns differently. And all the other Mefarshim say there really was a snake involved. And the truth is, based on the Sforno, you have a big problem, which is, what was the punishment that was? Who are we punishing exactly? We tell you, okay, you're the snake, you have to slither on your belly and eat dust. Well, who is Hashem talking to? If there was no snake, then nobody's slithering on their bellies. So that's a very hard shot in terms of the psukim. But it's a very interesting description. And what he says here, whether it's the pshat or not, the description is so powerful and so important. This is really the struggle we go through daily. Whether we know it or not, this is how it works. This is the process of how the Zitzahara gets us to sin. Look at the next quote. Haya aru mikol chayas asade, ki hakoach hademyoni hamovel tumas hatanugim hakoach hamisaveh. So now he's describing the Sforno again, going in his own personal shita here. He says, what does it mean that the nachash is more clever than all the animals of the field? So again, nachash doesn't mean a snake, it means the Yitzhara. So what's it more clever then? Ki hakoach hademyoni hamovel tumas hatanugim hakoach hamisaveh. This idea of dimyon, imagination, that takes these images of pleasure and brings them to the force in us that causes us to want to sin, was stronger in the human being than in other animals. Like it says, called gadol mechavero, yitzro gadol mimenu. The Chazal tell us, the greater you are, the greater your Yetzirah is. So meaning that the Yetzirah in the human being was a much stronger Yetzirah than in other creations of Hashem. So that's, it was Arum, it was more clever, it was more powerful than all of the other creations of Hashem. That's the description. This last line he mentions here, this is a quote from the Gemara, it's called Gadol Mechavero Yitzro Gadol Mimenu. That anybody is greater than his friend, his Yetzirah is greater as well. It's a very important line of the Gemara, just to go off on a second on that line of the Gemara, even if it's not really relevant to our topic. There's a lot of ways that Mefarshim understand that line. One point is that, you know, if you're a greater person, then you're going to have bigger challenges, meaning that the Yitzhara will attack you even more strongly because you're in the position of greatness. That's one understanding. One understanding is that the challenges you'll get will be more difficult challenges. I mean, we look at, let's say you look at a great tzaddik. You say, well, they have it so easy. It's so easy for them. They know they're always positive, and they never complain, and they have great bitachon, and they daven with kavana, and they make their brachos, and they never eat too much food, and they know every halacha properly, and never say lashon hara, everything else. And we don't understand that, you know, their challenges may be, you know, may be real challenges, but they might be on a much more complex or finer level than ours. I mean, we're dealing with challenges that are more out in the open. They're dealing with more difficult but yet more subtle challenges. So that could be part of it as well. And then another pshat, which I think is also very important to understand, is that some say that anybody is greater than their friend, the Yetzer Hara is greater. It's not saying that they are that the Yetzer Hara is worse because they're greater. It's the other way around. they became so great because they had a difficult Yitzhara. I mean, how does somebody become great? If someone has no challenges, they don't become great. Right, exactly. So, I mean, it's a simon that when someone is great, then you should know that they must have had a lot of challenges. Because you don't become great without challenges. So you meet a great person. So how did you get to be who you are? The answer has to be that the person overcame a lot. Somebody who has to overcome nothing can only achieve so much greatness. But somebody who has to overcome a lot, again, assuming they overcame the challenges, that they achieve true greatness. So another understanding called Gadol Mechaver Yitzhar Gadol Mimenu is that if you see somebody great, then you shall know that they must have had a very difficult challenge to get there. Because getting to be great means you have to overcome a lot to get there. So that's a side point. But just going back to our topic. So the Sfarno is telling us that it's all mushel. There was no snake. It was just the Yitzhara fooling Chava. And the Yitzhara is a very, very difficult challenge. He brings us all these different images and fantasies that make us feel that the Severa we're about to do is going to be so exciting. And really, it's totally empty. There's nothing there. Let's go to the next source here. This one is a Rav Haigon. I just want to skip. I'm not going to read the whole thing here. I just want to skip down. Did I mark it off on those sheets? Or not? Maybe I didn't. I'm not sure I did. If you skip to the middle of this paragraph, it says Va'asher. It's like right in the middle. And the line begins Mehem Davar. And in the middle line, there's a period that says Va'asher. So I'm going to start there. But again, he's addressing the same issue. What is the snake? What was his speech? What did he do wrong? Etc. So he says, So he says that what you have to believe from the pasuk is that the Nachash said exactly as the Torah says he said. And we see from this that the snake could speak. And we're not sure if he spoke like a human or communicated in some other way. So again, back to that same question that Ezra dealt with. Now, how did he speak? Was it in human language, in snake language? He says, I'm not sure. But the fact that we saw Hashem did punish him and rebuke him, we know that the snake sinned. Because you only get punished if you are deserving a punishment. And if the snake didn't sin, he's not deserving a punishment. And only somebody who violates Hashem's will is fit to be punished. But it could be that only that one snake was so clever. Or it could be that all snakes were like that. So you lose a lot of things in the air, but it's just interesting for us to know that was it that this particular snake had special powers? Or was it that all snakes were like that? Rav Haigon says, I'm not sure, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot to this story that we don't know. It's a different world, you know, beyond that which we can fully understand. But he says for sure the snake spoke, there was a snake, and he spoke, and he was a sinner, the snake. He went against Hashem's will, he got punished. He was an actual snake, and he actually spoke. Did he speak in Lashon HaKodesh, or did he speak in some other type of communication? Did he hiss, and they understood the hisses? Maybe, we don't know. Was it that this snake was unique, or all snakes like that? We also don't know. So it's an interesting thing just to put into our own heads that, you know, what this snake was, not so clear. So this is all descriptions of what was the snake.
But the fact that it sinned shows that it actually was a being and not some kind of figment.
Yes, correct, exactly. That'd be the problem with the Sforno, the Kasha would ask, is that if it's just the Yitzhara, then it doesn't really sin. It's doing it. These aren't supposed to be doing that. The Nachash was obviously violating Hashem's will. That's why he got punished for it. So that would be a kasha to ask on the Sforno. But again, all the other commentaries understand the snake to be an actual snake. And the communication was some form of communication that Chava understood. And what it did was going against Hashem's will. That seems to be clear. So let's move on to the next section here, which may take us into next week also. What did he say that was so enticing? Now we have to look at the snake's argument. I mean, the snake came to entice Chava to sin. And what he said to her is interesting. You know, what did he say that was so powerful? How was she fooled? And that's going to be a lot of what we're going to look at now. In what way did the snake fool her? So just to look back, just going back for a second to the quote from the Pasuk. It says, Vayomer, the snake said to Elisha, the snake said to the woman, Af, Ki Amar Elokim lo tilchlu mikol itzagan. So the word af is kind of out of context here, it seems. Even I guess you'd say even though, or kind of like, didn't Hashem say not to eat from all the trees of the garden? So already the Nachash is doing something deceptive. Because Hashem doesn't say don't eat from any tree. Hashem said don't eat from that tree. But the Nachash approaches Chava and says, hey Chava, didn't Hashem say not to eat from any of the trees of the garden? So obviously Hashem didn't say that. So what is he doing there? So before we even look at that, I just want to focus on the word af for a second. The Medrash discusses what the word af is doing here. The word af doesn't seem to quite fit. And the Medrash says, this is number 13, source 13. So the pasuk says af. Amr Chanina ben Sansin. So Rabbi Chanina ben Sansin says the following: Arba hen shepaschu ba'af, v'nevdu ba'af. There are four situations in the Torah where they began with the word af, and they are destroyed with the word af. Beilohen, Nachash, v'sara ufim, v'adas korach v'haman. So there's four places you find that people use the word af and were destroyed. The snake, the Sar Ofim, the chief baker in the story of Yosef, Adas Korach, Korach's group of rebels, and Haman. They all use the word Af and were destroyed. Where do we see this? Nachash said, Vayomer El Isha Af. So Nachash began with the word Af. The Sar Ofim said, Af Ani B'chalomi. Adas Korach said, Af Lo Eretz. And Haman said, Af Levi Esther. So the Medrash just picks up, and this word af seems to be something negative. What exactly is about the word af? So the word af also, besides meaning even, or also, af could also mean what? It could mean anger. Right? V'chara af Hashem. Right? The anger. So, it's hard to know exactly what the Medrash means, but also but the connotation of the speech being used already denotes some form of anger being caused or developed based on the conversation. But you see, this is a common word used in the downfall of Rishayim. That's the word af. So what was he telling her? So he said to her, didn't Hashem say not to eat from the Eitz, from any of the trees? Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, Hashem definitely allowed them to eat from the trees, just not Eitz Hadas. So Rashi talks about this, source 14. Rashi says, af ki omar, shema omar lechem, lo sochlu mikol. So first, Rashi translates the word af as Shema, perhaps. So again, af usually mean like even. Rashi wants to say it means perhaps. Perhaps Hashem said to you not to eat from any of the trees. So he's not saying a definitive statement. He's like asking her a question. He's trying to open up a conversation. Even though the snake certainly saw Adam and Chava eating other fruits, I mean that's the eight. He started speaking to her a lot, so she would respond, and then he'd come to speak about that tree. I mean, this was part of his ploy, his deception. He wanted to open a conversation. So he didn't want to just say, hey, come eat from the tzadas. He wanted to have a shmooze with her. So he started speaking about things, even though he knew the answer, and it was ridiculous, and of course he knew they could eat from other trees. He's trying to open the conversation, just to get her to that point where they speak about the Eitz Hadas. This is a unfortunately you find this as a plot from criminals nowadays. You know, when they want to try to convince someone to do the wrong thing or steal someone's identity or whatever, molest someone, chas v'shalom, anything, it always starts not just with I'm about to do a crime, but starts with shmooze, a conversation. Even though it's a meaningless thing, you get that phone call from the con artist who wants to steal your credit card number. They're not going to say, what's your credit card number? I'm not talking, they try to get you involved in the conversations. People try to make a relationship. People try to make some sort of, there has to be some sort of this rapport between the people and connection. And then they'll move into what their plot really is, the deception. So the Nachash, which was the original challenge given to Adam and Chava, he's the master of deception. And he knows that the way that you start a conversation, if you want to trick somebody, is just by trying to speak a lot with them. Here, by the way, he spoke to her a lot just because he wanted to be able to respond. So if he says something ridiculous, she'll respond, of course not. Of course we get from the other trees. Oh, really? Well, what about this one? And then they start schmoozing about the tree he wants to get her to talk about. So that's Rashi.
Rashi?
Yeah.
It shows that he was watching them.
Yeah.
That he was observing in order to planning.
Right, correct. Right. Rashi certainly is of that opinion. Rashi says this a few different ways in this parak, that he was observing and watching, you know, waiting to this, in the place's attack. So, yes, you know, he's coming in with devious plans, and it's premeditated. It wasn't just just a whim. Let's look at number 15. So, again, we're talking here, this is going back to the Sforno. And remember, the Sforno is going according to his Shita, that we're not dealing with the snake, we're dealing with the Yetzer Hara. So the Sforno has to say, what's the discussion here? V'yomer l'isha, ki sichla chalush hisatzel misbonin v'skomem al dimyon hakozev. So, again, the Sforno is saying the whole description is of the inner workings of Chava and how she's dealing with the challenge. So he says that she had a weak mind and it wasn't strong enough to contemplate and recognize that this is all a fantasy, and she wasn't able to overpower her fantasies. V'tzayer az kocha medame, so therefore her imagination was able to depict for her, ki omnum afki omer elokim, this whole... This was a discussion within herself, and Sha'afal piz Amar Elokim lo sochem etzadas pentemusun kamakom lo is ameseh. So she told herself, "Wait a minute! Even though Hashem said if you eat from etzadas you're going to die, this can't be true." V'chein Amar shekia shanachash v'udimyon. So she said that when the nachash, which was the imagination, the fantasy, hiskel assume suffik bazeh, started placing doubts into this. So she says to herself a positive thing. She says, wait a minute. Even though Mitzahara is causing me doubts about Hashem's commands, well, I don't have to get involved in that tree. There's so much other fruit to eat. Didn't Hashem take any other fruit? So the Sforno is looking at this as a positive conversation that Chava is having to herself. I mean, and this is also true. Sometimes, you know, we might be attached to do something which might not be the right thing to do. But we can say, so why get involved? I'm not sure if that's right to do or not, but I know this is right. So why should I eat this when I could eat that? You know, this, I'm not sure if it's kosherous. You know, I had a shiloh, maybe yes, maybe no, but this I know is kosher. So why would I eat that? No, I have this to eat. So Chava tells herself, well, why should I get involved in this? Yes, even though the Yetzer Hara got the best of her, and she was questioning Hashem already, well, why get involved with it? Let's just take the thing which is a sure bet, rather than the thing which might kill you. So this is her struggle within herself. So Afki Amar Hashem, Mikol Yitzgan Nochel, is her telling herself, Hashem said to eat anything from the garden, why get involved in this doubtful tree? And then the Sforno says further, Omnam Dimyon is chazik liachas kina v'sheker chas v'shom l'kel isparach. But then the Dimyon got stronger, and now she started reflecting upon Hashem jealousy and sheker. V'sayer sh'amar oso pri k'deshul yasigu bo to elos lios kelokim. And then she depicted in her mind, we'll discuss that in the next pasuk, that Hashem really was holding back the good for himself. I mean, part of the conversation of the Nachash to Chava was that, you know, if you eat from that fruit, you'll become like God. Visim kelokim yodei tovara. So Hashem really, there's nothing wrong with the fruit. Hashem's protecting his own power. Hashem knows if you eat that fruit, you're going to be as powerful as him. So he told you not to touch it. He's just scaring you. But the truth is that Hashem is jealous. Hashem's trying to stand up for his own rights, you know, kaviyachol. And therefore Hashem lied to you and told you, don't eat from that fruit because you'll die. And really what he means, don't eat from that fruit because then you'll be on level with me. That was really what the Nachash was getting at with this. So according to the Sforno's take on it, that was Chava's own personal deception in her own mind. And, you know, and we might say to ourselves, well, that's ridiculous. But we do it all the time. I mean, all the time we're able, you know, we make these silly stories in our mind to justify things that we're doing. You know, and we might portray a friend of ours as being jealous or arrogant. They're the liar, not me. And you know, ridiculous things we're able to force those within our heads because that's what Yitzhar does to us. And this is just, you know, one example. So to reflect upon Hashem is, you know, that's obviously extreme. But we do it all the time in our own lives. All in our own lives, in our own minds, you know, we portray people in a negative light, even though it might be totally wrong. We're not down the kafschus. We think they're out to get us. We think that they're nasty and they're mean and they're dishonest and this and that. And we do it, and then that's all our dimyum. And he finishes and says, "V'tzayr shem rasu pre-kedushli sigubo to olas lios kelokim." And he says, it's not going to cause you death. And that's what the Nachash says to the Isha. So again, in the Sfarno, it's her own personal struggle. It doesn't really matter that much if it was a snake saying this or her own struggle within this. This is the process of having Sahara fool somebody. You know, this is the struggle. This is the challenge. This is how it's important we're aware of this. The Vilna Gaon says in his Perush on Mishle, he says that part of the idea of developing chachma, of wisdom, is that if you understand more about the Yetzer Hara, you can fight it. If I don't know I'm being tricked, so then I can't fight the person tricking me. I don't know I'm being tricked. If you know this person is a deceptive person, and you know his tricks, it could be sometimes you can't overpower the person, but you'll know you're being fooled at least. Let's be aware of what he's going to try to do to you. You know, all the time we're warned about different con artists, different people who want to try to, are out there trying to deceive us. And it's, you know, even if people still get fooled, it's important we know what are the tricks out there. If you know the tricks, you're much likely to get fooled. So the Yitzhahara, these are the Yitzhahara's tricks. Now, the story of the Nachash is how the Yitzhahara tricks us. You know, I think we'll stop here for the week, which Hashem will do more next week. You know, the packet keeps on going.
Thank you. So. Yeah, pretty good.
Thank you.